110 Weaver Road.
111.
Thank you.
Thence comes the mystic substance of our souls into the prodigy of our nature's birth. There is the fallen, unfallen height. Sorry, I go back again. Thence comes the mystic substance of our souls into the prodigy of our nature's birth. There is the unfallen height of all we are and dateless fount of all we hope to be. On every plane, the hieratic power, initiate of unspoken verities, dreams to transcribe and make a part of life in its own native style and living tongue, some trait of the perfection of the unborn, some vision seen in the omniscient light, some far tone of the immortal rhapsodist voice, some rapture of the all-creating bliss, some form and plan of the beauty unutterable. Worlds are there, nearer to those absolute realms, where the response to truth is swift and sure, and spirit is not hampered by its frame, and hearts by sharp division seized and rent, and delight and beauty are inhabitants, and love and sweetness are the law of life. This is a very beautiful world from where the spirit, formless spirit, accepts to get manifested in form. It is a subtle world. There is form. So he said, the images of the everlasting truth, he has said earlier, look out from a chamber of its self-wrapped soul. It is from there that the mystic substance of our souls, this is almost a oxymoron. Soul has no substance. And yet in this world of manifestation, soul, which is the divine essence that is there everywhere, in that essence there is a magical content. It contains something, which is why the combination of form, matter, expression, and soul, spirit, consciousness, these two are blended. And that is the miracle of our birth on earth, our nature's birth. Man is matter. Man is soul in a body. That is the prodigy. A prodigy has here the miracle. It's almost a miracle that we wear a material form, and we are not that form only. In us there are so many worlds that we contain. They are within us, and that is where it is a miracle, where we are unfallen. Otherwise we are fallen, in the sense, by the term fallen you can think of something which has lost connection with the origin. Much of us, or most of our being, has lost connection with the divine origin. We are blinded by the lower creation, by darkness, by unconsciousness, by matter. And yet, we are not just that. We are fallen. We have lost our connection, consciously almost. We have chosen to be separated from the divine origin, we have become egos, and yet we are not fallen. That is the unfallen height of all we are. The origin from where we have been, we have come down, that stays with us, whether we know it or not. That is why you can connect with the divine. Somewhere the link is always there. We are not down here, human beings, and the divine is up there far away, and we are so different from him. We cannot be like him, we cannot act like him, we cannot think like him. we are essentially Him. And that is the unfallen height of all we are, and dateless fount of all we hope to be. Because we have part in us, one part in us is connected with that origin. That is why we can dream of manifesting that. In our present state, we can still dream to manifest, to embody that perfection which we do not possess consciously. I am not perfect. I am far from that. But I want to embody that. That is my highest dream. In all of things human, man's human dream is to embody perfection. That perfection is the divine. To live that, not simply to pray to that, not simply to open to that, not simply only to connect with that to some extent, but to embody that. If I become that, and I can become because that substance is in me, unknown to me, it is waiting for me to call, to open myself to it. The Divine is always present. He is waiting for me to turn to Him. Or she is waiting all the time because she is grace, she is love, she is compassion. And with that help, we can become what we really dream of becoming. Otherwise, the dream remains far away. There is the unfallen height of all we are. Somewhere we have not fallen. And dateless fount, eternal origin of all we hope to be. That eternal origin is present in us. I am not therefore simply a mortal being. I am an expression of the eternal. Only I have lost contact, I have forgotten about it. This is the hieratic power. Hieratic has essentially the significance. Today we think, when we speak of hierarchy, we think of different grades. But actually, hieratic has its origin in the term sacred, the Greek, something that is sacred. And because it is sacred, and since most of us are unaware of those things that are spiritual, sacred truths, the word hieratic is also associated with secret. It's a secret, sacred knowledge. In all spiritual schools, because they were like schools, where the gurus would select those students whom they considered ready or capable of receiving the knowledge. They were always selected. Most were not selected, only few. And because they were recognized in them something, a conscious aspiration and opening to that presence. On the outside, we are simply ordinary. On the inside, we are divine. It is a secret presence. Mother talks often of the psychic contact. Some, without knowing, have it. They don't even know they have it. Some consciously establish it to stay in that connection, to stay always turned, connected to the Divine. That is what gives significance to life. Otherwise, life is just the passing of days and nights. Certain activities, you do this, you do that, you go here, you go there. But if you can utilize this time for establishing more and more constantly that connection with that innate presence, which is waiting for me to turn to it. It never leaves me. I don't turn to it. I've turned my back to it, then I don't see it. But it is there. That power is there on every plane. Even in the body, the spirit exists. In the mind, it exists. In the world of life, it exists. Why only life? The subconscious, it exists. In the unconscious, it exists. That divine presence is... These planes could not exist if the divine presence were not there. The inconscience would not have any purpose and significance because it has a purpose. If that divine presence were not hidden in the darkness or in the confusion and complete ignorance of the subconscious, it is always there. On every plane it is there. That is why there is the possibility of growth, of progress, of trying to become, to embody, to realize one's aspiration. Otherwise, aspiration is something you may formulate with your mind. Your mind may say, this is nice, I would like to be like this. That is not enough. You have to live it. And you can. If you are sincere, that help is there. The promise is there. So on every plane, this power, initiate of unspoken verities. Initiate also has a special significance. Initiates were those to whom the initiation was given, the secret knowledge. We have book 1, canto 4, it's a marvelous canto, where diksha, that initiation is diksha, where the key to the inner opening and realization, assert, it can be a sound, it can be a form, it can be anything that relates the individual surface consciousness to that inmost presence. If the Guru sees in you the possibility of staying in that contact, what happens very often to most of us, since we are here, certainly there is an aspiration. Certainly there is a love for the Divine Mother. But to live it in thought, in speech, and action, to be that in all that we attempt, that may or may not be there. I'm not judging anybody, it's not always there in me. But to be able to live it is the starting point for the one who has been given initiation. Now you can live that. Now you have to. So these were called the initiates. To initiate actually means to start, to begin. But they were like beginners. The beginners of an inner journey. The journey of consciousness. Of staying in that consciousness, that contact, to live that all the time. Initiate of unspoken verities, because they don't have to be formulated, they have to be lived. You have to undergo the experiences. Dreams, to transcribe and make a part of life. To embody this beauty, this perfection that the hieratic power opens to us. That comes more easily because it is in the world of the subtle matter. Matter here is not dense. Matter otherwise is dense. The physical material world is resistant, has a certain density, and therefore it is not necessarily capable of transmitting that, because the element of resistance is much more. But in the world of the subtle physical, there is no density. Form is there, but dull material resistance is not there. So it is through these that the connection of visions, and inspirations and openings to inner contacts, they come to the individual, provided that the individual is conscious and constant. Constancy is very difficult to maintain. Now and then you can have an aspiration to be constantly in that state, in sleep and in waking, all the time, to be connected with the divine. That is where something it is, it becomes a part of life. It makes it part of life. Dreams to transcribe, it is as if put down in writing that perfection in our physical life. And that is exactly something that Mother wanted, which is why she emphasizes so much the perfection of our external activities also. No external activity has been eliminated, but to make that external activity, whatever it is, through beauty or through some light or some joy, something of that consciousness, to make it a part of our daily life in its own native tongue, style and living tongue, in its own native style, not in our style. That is the thing. The inspiration comes and I transmit it without interference. Otherwise, you get an inspiration, you give it your own interpretation. We are not here to interpret the divine intention. We are here simply to be channels to transmit that interpretation. Everything in its own native tongue, not in our language, in his language. There is so much that is implied. Even in our daily activities, we say, would Mother like this? Or would Sri Aurobindo have done this? How am I to know? Who am I to say whether he would have liked it or not? I can try my best, but it is ultimately some kind of, I would call it spiritual impertinence. How dare I say? All I do is let it speak for itself. Let that manifest itself. Let that will be manifested through all things, through me. Sometimes you can say in spite of me. Without my meddling too much with it. We do. If you have acquired certain abilities and capacities, artists do. They have acquired a certain technical mastery, a certain expression, and that mastery itself becomes sometimes an impediment. That is why for certain artists, rarely, like she has said about Leonardo, he says he was a yogi. He transmitted. Of Raphael, she says, no. He had a very mental background. The images that he used to see were transmitted by the mind. And that's what happens when you have acquired mental culture and refinement. That has its own demands. It has its own laws and rules. But if you can just be blank, allow that inspiration to manifest itself through you, your voice, your hands, your speech, anything, your song. It's the soul that manifests. Like he says later in Book 11, when he describes a short phrase describing dance. Dance is made by the body. The body is something that needs a lot of training to manifest beauty and grace, and certain technical control and mastery is often given to it. But he says, what is truly dance? The movements of the soul. When the soul dances through the body, automatically the body will move in grace, in harmony. But it is not something that is a copy of something that has been taught in some other school of training. That is where some art comes in the way. To allow that force to manifest through the body. But in order to do that, there has to be a certain capacity given to the tool, the body or the voice. So it is like saying, as she says in some way, you learn whatever you can and then forget all about it. And let that take over. But by then your instrument has been refined, has been shaped, has become supple, has become deceptive. If I'm just a deceptive instrument of that force, and I don't meddle with it, then some trait of the perfection of the unborn in the world of form, something that is formless. Unborn has no form. Some vision seen in the omniscient light. Something seen in the light of a consciousness beyond the limitations of mind and even intuition. Everything has its own limits. Omniscience is all-knowing. It does not have any limits. It's infinite. To have ability now and then to catch something of that perfect light, some far tone, maybe a faint expression of the immortal rhapsodist voice. Rhapsody is a sense of delight, beauty and harmony. That music, because this is there in many of the early mystics in all countries. And you see the universe. The universe is a totality that is sustained constantly in spite of all our clashes and all the attempts we make to break up the unity of the world, of the universe. It is one. And there is what the ancients understood. They called it the music of the spheres. The whole creation is in harmony. The original harmony of that original musician. He has as if willed something and projected out of himself this play of a complex multiple universe. One Ananda, but so many aspects. One song, so many tones. This is always there. So behind the play of multiple complex expressions, that sense of the original harmony. This is one of the aspects of the supramental. The supramental is not simply the spirit manifesting in matter, but always the consciousness of harmony. No, everything blends. Harmony is not oneness. Harmony is a blending of all the manynesses in a greater totality. Nothing is omitted. No element is omitted. No being is left out. But all brought together in a single complex whole. That is the third law of the supramental that he speaks of. The unity in the diversity, spirit manifesting in matter, and that universal harmony. And therefore the sense of the rhapsody, the ananda, the delight of that wonderful joy that is behind all things in spite of the external forms where joy seems absent, where clashes seem to rule. But behind it, it is always sustained by that harmony. And the voice, when he speaks of the voice, it becomes one conscious will manifesting itself in beauty and harmony. It is not just a sound. Voice is a projection of a conscious word. Word is a projection of a will. It is not a noise, it's not a sound. That is why creation is often described as it starts with a word. That word is a voice. A being has a voice. It's not a sound that is floating in the air. There is a being, there is a presence. That presence has a voice. This mother speaks of it in her last talks, again and again, that presence in all things, which is the creative ananda, some rapture. Maybe we can't, in this world of the subtle physical beauty, we can't have the whole of the supramental consciousness manifesting. No, we can't. But something of that is present in all the planes. The something of the supramental principle is there right down to the very bottom of the inconscient, or in the physical, or in the vital, and then certainly where the physical is not dense, that is in the subtle physical. Some rapture of the all-creating bliss, because everything is made by the delight of creation. The divine creates because he chooses to create. When you choose to do something, you do it because you like to. Divine chose to make a universe, to manifest himself, projecting himself in this play of multiplicity. It is a bliss. Otherwise he would have stayed aloof in his supreme state of being the Brahman, far above all things. And all the rest would just have been a maya, an illusion. This whole creation is not at all divine. Only that which is above is the divine. No, the whole creation cannot exist if the divine were not holding it up. The opposition between this world of creation and the world above, they are simply things that we, formulas we have made because perhaps we need to understand things a little at a time. We have to go up the different stages, because this whole book too is actually a climbing up from level to level. And as we climb up, or we attempt to climb up, our vision broadens, widens, heightens. We become aware of what we were not aware of when we were right at the bottom. That is the purpose. So that is why Sri Aurobindo himself writes about his composition of Savitri, that he uses Savitri as a means of ascension. Savitri itself is his climbing up. It's a journey of ascension. And at each stage, he sees some play of the divine consciousness in its own, at any particular level. Nothing is cut off from the divine. But these are all intermediary planes. These intermediary planes have not acquired the ability to transmit the entire totality of the truth. For that, you have to reach the highest levels. So some rapture of the all-creating bliss, some form and plan of the beauty unutterable. Beauty is form, perfection of presence, of manifestation of the divine presence in form. But form, you say, has an outline. There is a form that doesn't have an outline, which cannot be described. And that is the ultimate beauty. That beauty for which there are no words. Otherwise, we give different descriptions to beauty. This is, all different cultures have their own definitions of what is beautiful. But when you have gone beyond different cultures, beauty is really a connection with the divine presence. So it is presence in the body. In our deepest consciousness lodged in the body, we can thrill to the divine presence. Beauty is not only something that exists. There is beauty of thought, there is beauty of feeling, there is beauty of everything. Everything in its most perfect manifestation we call beautiful. So that beautiful expression is part of that ultimate expression of perfection. Perfection, which is beauty unutterable. One of the aspects of the mother. The mother's expressing herself through beauty. Not only through power, not only through peace and love and grace, but perfection in the work that is the working of manifestation of the divine in even external forms. But that perfection that is described by Sri Aurobindo in the description of Saraswati or Mahasaraswati, it is not perfection only of line and shape and work. It is sustained by that divine presence, which is her smile. He uses that term, that presence that is always there in all things. So worlds are there, nearer to those absolute realms. Those highest absolute realms we cannot always connect with. There are other realms which are closer to us. So it is as if the Divine has worked out such a plan that He has put certain experiences within our reach. Not only the experiences that are far above our present reach, because to reach the highest level is beyond us. But there are also expressions of Himself that come within our reach. That is why, for us, it is He, Sri Aurobindo, or the Mother, they are there. Presence is there. If you are sincere, if you are absolutely concentrated, they are within your reach. And you are in touch with that. You can. Even now, even today, they have not left. They are forever there in the subtle physical, as Mother has said about Sri Aurobindo. He is there in the subtle physical. And so is she. If he is there, she is there. That world is present. It's not very far. That's the color of... That's why he puts it blue. That presence of the subtle physical is a pale blue color. It is not something that is dull red or color of something that is hard matter, stone. It is something that is not exactly sky, between earth and sky. Something that we can hold up, reach up to. So, worlds are there, nearer to those absolute realms, where the response to truth is swift and sure. We can relate to that. We have it inside us. That is why you can respond. You can respond to something because that element is present in you. You can respond to joy, you can respond to harmony, you can respond to even anger or all things that are dark, because all these elements are present in all of us. And with that capacity to respond, I relate. So if I can develop in me the capacity to respond to beauty, to joy, to the divine love, I concentrate more on developing that, then I forget about my ego, I forget about my personal needs and demands. I stay in touch with the divine presence that is always waiting for me to turn to it. The divine is always waiting for me to turn to it. I forget. It's my fault. I turn away. Man turns away. The divine presence is there. It's waiting. It is within our reach. It has come down to us. Where the response to truth is swift and sure, and spirit is not hampered by its frame. Why can't we always relate? Because we are hampered, usually, by our frame. Hampered, disturbed, the spirit in you the consciousness, the soul in you, is often layered over by body, life, mind, subconscious, unconscious. All these planes are there, and each has its own laws. Each part has its own demands. Each part has its own swabhava, its own character. So there is this that comes obstructing our simple, straightforward connection with that presence that is beyond all terms, all definitions, all descriptions. Because each part in us has its own laws. Body is dense. The vital is full of its own energies, which are not usually, which are very often disorderly. Where the powerful ego is most powerfully transmitted through the vital. The mind has its own pride, has its own formulas. All these things are hamperings. Instead, if I can just be simple, and that is one answer she gave once. Be simple. Very simple. Be simple. Be happy. It's very difficult to be simple. Remove all these structures of body, life, mind, ego. They take up so much room. Clear up all this excess structures in your being. Simplify yourself. Become childlike and be as if you are simply part of her. Like she said, be like a flower. That flower doesn't have any, it opens quietly to the sunlight. It doesn't make a big show and sound. There is no drum beats when the flower is beginning to open. It doesn't make a fuss. Man makes a big fuss when he does something great. He lets everyone know that he's done something wonderful. The flower is doing something wonderful all the time, simply opening up to the sunlight. She said, that's why be like a flower. Have the faith, have the ability, have the dependence on that. It will open. You will open because it is always there. They are within our reach. They are there, nearer to those absolute realms where the response to truth is swift and sure, and spirit is not hampered by its frame, and hearts by sharp division seized and rent. Rent is torn. Where worlds where these things are not there, our hearts are divided by sharp division. What we call love is very often a demand of personal satisfaction, the individual demands. And therefore, it gives rise to jealousy, to anger, to all kinds of discord. It is a very difficult experience. There are worlds where there is pure harmony, the ability to just feel that divine grace, which is love. And hearts are not, those hearts that are not disturbed by these things. They are part of that field of divine ananda, I suppose. He talks of the play of the divine, sometimes using the image in Ahana of the play of the divine flute player. He is there. He plays with all the souls. Each of the gopis are actually souls that are drawn to him. Sometimes he turns away from them and they feel hurt. He said, no, that perfect world is that. There is no division, there is no separation. It's a game. There is no turning away from the divine. It's part of a dance only. And delight and beauty are inhabitants, and love and sweetness are the law of life. This is the world of a perfect manifestation of the divine in all things, which is just above our world. where the sense of harsh obstruction and resistance is not there anymore. That's why in the subtle physical, they are perfect. He uses the image somewhere, the blue lotus of the idea. The Manasarovar, that's for that. The lotus, the blue lotus grows only there. That is in the world of the higher mind. It is there that the perfection of the conscious, lotus is a symbol of consciousness. Perfect idea. This perfect idea can flower. And we can relate to it when we break out of the littlenesses of our small, limited, physical, vital, mental nature. So, it is a finer substance in a subtler mold. It's a substance is there in a subtler mold. That's why I mentioned the blue lotus. It is substance, but it is of the mind, higher mind. In a subtler world, embodies the divinity, earth, but dreams. We dream of that world where things are permanent, things are perfect, things are beautiful, things are harmonious. That is our ideal. Today it's only a dream, but it exists somewhere. That's why you can dream. You can dream of something because it exists. If not here, somewhere else. We have to travel to that world. Its strength can overtake joy's running feet. Because our life, joy runs away from us. You run after joy. You run after happiness. It's always out of reach. But that finer substance can embody that. Overleaping the fixed, overleaping the fixed hurdles set by time. Otherwise, we are trapped in the world of time. This world of the subtle physical is timeless. There is no deterioration. There is no death there. Death strikes the body. In the subtle physical, the body does not have that resistance of matter. So forms exist for any length of time. Can you stop there?
Can I ask you something not from here? Not from here. Small thing. Monte Sheryl says that the ego is mental, vital, physical.
Mainly. It's not just only.
But so, with the cessation of body, the ego does not cease. So here he's talking of death.
No. Soul?
With the cessation of body, the physical ego goes, but the mental and vital ego remains.
They stay for a while, not for a long time.
So he's talking.
They dissolve in time. But not death, but it's a phenomenon that strikes things that have been formed. So death will first touch the body. Then the vital life force takes a little longer for the life force to leave the body. Then the light of truth, some part of the truth is there in the mind. Mind is an instrument of light. That also takes its time to slowly come out of the being. Because we are made of these things. The soul doesn't need to have light, it is light. It doesn't need to embody light or knowledge, it is that. But in death, one by one, these things which are, have been given a certain time limit. This much time you have. That has been the law up to here. You get that in book 10. Death says he has a time. This is my frame. This is my kingdom. It will withdraw from the kingdom when it thinks it is. Because perhaps the body can't sustain so much life force. I cannot sustain so much physical force. Slowly things get, there is decay, there is deterioration, there is death. And that is the whole thing, the mystery. That when there is death, usually there is deterioration. But Sri Aurobindo's body did not deteriorate. You could not call it death. There is no decay. There was, externally there was some kind of ailment, an illness he had put on himself knowingly. There was some kidney infection. Purposely to things rational minds could have some explanations. But there was no decay. For 5 days it stayed.